I listen to people who don't vote and they say cute little things like, oh, I'm just not interested in politics. Oh, it just encourages the politicians. Oh, they're so boring. Oh, they're all crooks. I think what you have there is a real dereliction of duty. I think you have a terrible failure of responsibility. Because politics in this country is not something that is done by them. It's not those people in Washington. It's not those people in your state capital. This country is run by us. It is our deal.
Turning outrage into outcomes. This is the Texas Blue Action Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to the debut episode of Texas Blue Action Podcast. We are so excited to be here and to be hosted by Progress Texas. For those of you that may have missed it, last week, Texas Blue Action did a podcast takeover for the Progress Texas Happy Hour, where we hosted an incredibly valuable conversation about SB 8, the abortion bill, with an incredible panelist of women. You know, it feels important as Texans to be telling our story in this national narrative that has come out around this legislation, that it really wants to beat up on what's going on here and pretend like we're all lumped into the same group, and ignoring the advocacy work that has been going on for a really long time. And so it was important to me for this episode to be able to continue that conversation with some other tremendous advocates that have been doing this work for a really long time. And so this is our debut episode, and I just want y'all to know that this is going to be the place where Texans come to tell their story about the fight for our state and then what we can do to make a difference here. So thanks again for being here today. As I mentioned, we have an incredible panel of individuals with us today. And first of all, I'd like to introduce Representative Donna Howard. She has been our Texas state representative in House District 48 since 2006. She has also been a staunch advocate for women's rights and reproductive justice. Thank you for joining us. We also have Stephanie Gomez, she, her, Aya. She is also a social justice advocate and has been staunch advocate in our legislature trying to fight crazy and egregious bills like SB 8. And then we have Jenny Pudilavich-Ross. Hi, Jenny. And she is the mother of three girls. She's been sharing her abortion story for 10 years and has sat on the board of Avow and Jane's Due Process. So thank you, everybody, for being here today. It's really great to have you join us. And Representative Howard, I would like to start with you and ask you to tell us a little bit about what the abortion bill is and what it means for pregnant people of Texas.
Well, yeah, thank you so much for having me and for focusing on this issue. It's obviously of huge concern to all of us and to our entire country. And let me also preface this by saying life gets in the way. I have a grandchild in my lap who may make a little noise, but that's actually part of what we're talking about here. We have different things going on in our lives. These are private decisions that we have a constitutional right to make in terms of our families. And what we had happen with SB 8, the so-called heartbeat bill, which we passed. And the legislature passed in the regular session that ended in May, but it did not go into effect until September 1. So I think a lot of people got caught off guard by what actually happened when it went into effect. It is basically saying there can be no abortions after basically 6 weeks gestation, which is 4 weeks of pregnancy, which is about 2 weeks after a missed period before a lot of people even know that they're pregnant. The determination is a so-called heartbeat, but the bill has been written to include any kind of cardiac electrical activity that can be detected. And at that point in time, there is no heart, there is no heartbeat, but there is a cardiac tissue that emits electrical impulses that can be picked up with a Doppler machine and made to sound like a heartbeat. So it's got a very visceral connection to people, thinking, oh, I'm hearing a heartbeat. It really is an emotional grabber is what it is. But the fact is that this is an embryo. It's not even a fetus yet and it has no heart. But that is it's basically a de facto ban on abortion because it occurs before probably 85% of abortions are typically performed. What makes it even more egregious, of course, is the private cause of action. which was their get around in terms of not being able to go to the courts for an injunctive relief. So any private citizen, any vigilante can sue anyone who aids and abets, including transporting somebody, taking care of their children, whatever. It's just absolutely unthinkable what has been put in place. And with the emergency effort to get the Supreme Court of the United States to push a pause button so we can get this thing sorted out, they refuse to do so. Mm-hmm. So the bill is in effect. Now, abortions are still legal. Everybody has to understand that. They are still legal. But unfortunately, there's a real chilling effect on anything being done after 6 weeks gestation. So right now, there's some temporary restraining orders that are in place, maybe have some minimal impact with that. Then we've also got the Department of Justice has sued the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. And that is going to be before a judge in Austin, a federal judge in Austin, on October 1st. That's our biggest hope right now for having a stay on this legislation. But make no mistake, this is going after eliminating our access to a constitutional right to have an abortion before viability occurs. And so this is really having a chilling effect on our state. And every other state is having to look at this now as the potential of where we might be going.
Right. I think that's such an important point. I mean, two things that you mentioned. And one is, you know, what they've done to empower citizens to go after their neighbor. You know, there are things on this podcast that we would love to discuss, but the way that the bill is written, we are not allowed to. And that in itself is terrifying to me. Also, you know, at the national level, I think people need to understand that this type of legislation has been being pushed for decades in a number of states. Texas was successful because of what happened to our Supreme Court last year. And so we're just ground zero. You know, the implications that of what this means nationwide is so important, right? Because it's going to set precedent for what other states can try to do. And that's why I feel very adamant that people from across the country need to not be turning away from Texans at this point, but making an investment in this fight with us. And so I thank you so much for your time and for sharing that. I do have one more question, Representative Howard, and this is more of a personal question. You know, you've been in this fight for a really long time, and I just want to know what it feels like for you to be here in this moment after, you know, doing it for so long and trying to avoid getting to this place.
Well, I have to say that I came of age before Roe v. Wade. So as a young woman, we did not have access to legal abortion. And that meant that a lot of negative things happened that also impacted our educational and employment opportunities and choices, that just simply impacted when we could decide about having a family. Right. It happened when I was still in college. And, you know, the freedom that was felt then of, okay, finally, people can have access to a safe, legal healthcare procedure and actually have control over one's own life and destiny. It was huge. And to think that we're here again, 50 years later, basically, going back to denying women autonomy over their own bodies, being forced to be vessels for pregnancies that they may not want to carry is absolutely unbelievable to me. And to watch what's happened in the legislature, it's really been the past decade or so that it's been every single session incrementally putting one more barrier after another, ultimately wanting to get to this point. The overall goal is, of course, to make sure that there are no abortions, period. Let me just, one more thing I want to say. This is about reproductive justice, because people of means will find a way to get a safe abortion. We're talking about people who cannot, people who don't have resources, people, women of color, women in the rural communities of our state. It is egregious what is being done to deny women who are more vulnerable the opportunity to do health care that those of us who have more resources actually have.
In a state that offers very little resources for those people anyway.
Absolutely.
Right? So it's just compounding issue on top of issue. And I know I said I had one last question, but something else came to mind. I watched you give a very impassioned speech around SB4, which was the medical abortion pill. You had to stop for a moment and ask the men in the room to listen to what you were saying. And when I was watching that, I thought, if that's not an accurate representation of what's happening to women in Texas, I don't know what is, right? That you had to literally stop your colleagues and say, you want me to be here and listen to what I have to say. And so to that point, y'all, we need to replace those people. We need better representation. The people that are going to stand up and fight for this type of legislation without hearing our voices do not deserve to represent us. So I hope that, you know, you will all get fired up and help us, you know, give some support to our current representatives.
Thank you. Yes, and thank you for noticing that. It reminds me, of course, of Senator Leticia Vandeput back with the 2013 filibuster, when she also had to say, what's it going to take for a woman to be recognized on the floor of the Senate to be able to have my voice heard? We are constantly having to demand our voices be heard.
Well, thanks again for being that fighter and trying to, you know, give our voice a place in the legislature. We appreciate you. And we love that your grandson was able to join us today.
Thank y'all for being so generous.
So great. Of course. And Stephanie, I would love to pivot to you for a minute. You know, Representative Howard touched on how this impacts women in rural areas, women of color, and more marginalized communities. And the reality is something that I don't think people realize is that it's not been easy to get an abortion in Texas for a long time, right? This is not new. This is just another challenge. And I would love for you to talk about some of your experience with that, you know, before SB8.
Yeah, definitely. So first of all, thanks to everyone for everything you've already said, Representative Howard. I always love listening to you speak. And it's very, I love being here right now. This is very nice. So thank y'all. But when you were actually listing out all those people, it's like, and framing this really as an issue of reproductive justice and talking about how this is going to be the disproportionate negative effects are going to be felt by rural Texans, by low-income Texans, by Texans of color. I was like, that is my abortion story, right? Like, I had an abortion when I was in high school, right? I was 18, but I was in high school. I was living way outside of Houston, Texas. I was young. I worked at McDonald's, and it was such a hassle to get that abortion. And this was in 2012. So this is before all the clinic closures in Texas. This is before that really that decade of Texas attacking bodily autonomy of its people. And so, you know, SB8 is terrifying, but, you know, every year, ever since I've gotten my abortion, which was literally from the moment 3 months after I became a legal adult, I have seen the Texas legislature just do everything it can to limit bodily autonomy. And every time I watch that, like, the first thought in my head is like, that could have been me. Like, what if I needed my abortion a couple of years later? What if I need an abortion tomorrow, right? Like, where does that put me? And where does that put the rest of Texans who are honestly probably facing those thoughts right now? It has absolutely never been easy to get an abortion in Texas. And it's never been easy to exist as those people who are most negatively impacted by this type of legislation, right?
Right. And I think you and I had a conversation, you know, at the reality that the closest abortion clinic for most people in Texas is 150 miles away.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So that in itself is a massive barrier for a lot of people, and not just for an abortion, but other reproductive health services, right? So pregnancy prevention, health screenings, all of the things that women, particularly in rural areas, deserve to have access to in the same way that we do in urban environments, right? And, you know, I think that it's so important for people to realize that this has been a long game in Texas, that we have been fighting for a long time. But, you know, it doesn't mean that the fight is over. There are still things that we can do to make a difference, but it's going to, you know, need to be all of us engaging in that fight. And Jenny, I would love to talk to you for a moment and allow you to take some time to share your story and also talk about your volunteer experiences that you have had with clinics and various organizations across the state.
Sure. Yeah. 10 years ago,
maybe a little bit more than that. I was getting married. I just had gotten married. I was pregnant. It was a super wanted pregnancy. I was in my mid-30s. And from the very beginning, there were challenges in the pregnancy. And at a little over 21 weeks, when I went in for my anatomy scan, we were told that the fetus was incompatible with life. So it was devastating. And then it was even more devastating to realize we had just moved here to Texas from New York City, and to realize, like, wow, this won't be easy to get healthcare. So yeah, I think that inspired me to start telling my story. As I ended my pregnancy with labor and delivery because I wanted to work with my doctor. And at the time I was told I could choose a D&E and go to Planned Parenthood on abortion day, and I was visibly pregnant, or I could continue working with my doctor and have to go through labor and delivery. So to think that even back then, before all these additional barriers have been put in place, my doctor didn't have all of the options available to her on the best way to treat my particular pregnancy is just heartbreaking. And I don't think most people realize that. So there were barriers back then. I delivered. It was a very challenging delivery. My body kind of didn't want to let go of the pregnancy, and I ended up getting a systemic infection and spending a week in the ICU and almost like losing my life. So I've been very passionate about this topic. I was passionate before this, and then going through this just brought to life how important it is for everyone to understand. And I think mine is a very, I don't know the right way to say it, but it's a very understandable pregnancy, right? I still get called murderer a lot when I tell my story, but I think a lot of people are like, oh, but you didn't get an abortion. You couldn't have a baby, like the baby wasn't gonna live. But honestly, under like what's going on right now, I would have to carry the baby to term. And it turns out that it was a result of two sperm fertilizing one egg. So if you know anything about science and life, there was no chance of a healthy child in that instance. So I feel I'm 45 now. I'm not going to have any more children. I do have three daughters though, and we love our life here in Austin and love living in Texas. And I really, it hurts me to think of how so many Texans just have so many rights taken away right now. You mentioned like my volunteer work. So I started telling my story as the first kind of action that I took. And then I connected with what was called NARAL Pro-Choice Texas. It's now called AVOW. I was on the board there for several years, and now I'm a text line volunteer at James Due Process, which helps teenage under 18 Texans figure out their options for healthcare. Sure. And I'd like to circle back for a minute to something you said that I think is really important, is that people can be understanding of your type of abortion, right? And at the end of the day, being, you know, and I certainly do not want to sound insensitive to your situation, Jenny, and you and I are friends, so I'm comfortable asking these questions. You know, that as a white woman and as somebody that had means, you were able to get that access. And that people around you want to make excuses for that type of abortion as being okay compared to maybe why other women might choose to do that. And I think that it's important as middle-aged women that, you know, we're talking to our other middle-aged white women that are helping support this type of policy and are lifting up the legislators that are doing it, because they're not willing to learn about the other stories and why it doesn't matter who chooses to do it, right? That it should be our choice regardless. And Seth, I'd like to loop you kind of back into the conversation, because what we've also seen from that group of women is really sort of frustrating since this bill was put into place, where people are using terms like the Texas Taliban and comparing what's happening here to the Handmaid's Tale. And I would love both of you to speak to why that's dangerous. Maybe Steph, you can tackle the Texas Taliban, and then Jenny, you can tackle Handmaid's Tale. But that narrative is not helpful. And it's not accurate, and it's not fair, and it's not placing the blame on the extreme right groups that are fighting for this type of work. And so, Steph, do you mind, you know, sharing your thoughts around why we shouldn't be using terms like that?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on that, and it's always a very difficult moment, right? Because I know that people are trying to bring awareness to the situation, and they're trying to just really express what's happening. But like, you know, as a person whose family is, you know, came from one of these like third world countries that people like to talk about where these types of things only happen, it's very insulting, right? And every time that Texas is in the news, people like to come in and tell Texas, this is something that is otherworldly. Texas is this place that you just have to get out of because it's like these crazy far off lands. And that's 100% not the case, right? Like we have seen extremist legislatures across the country doing the exact same things as Texas.
That's right.
And you know, the violence against bodies, and especially the bodies of Black and Brown women, is something that is deeply tied to the roots of this country. And that is a history that we have to understand and acknowledge and, you know, always just put front and center when we're thinking about like why our legislation is what it is. And so I get where people are coming from, but it's just honestly insulting. And like, you have to understand, I think, that the Texas legislature is not doing these things because it's seeing what other countries are doing. This is just 100% exactly what they want. And, you know, Texans are the ones that are suffering because of this extremist legislation.
Sure. And I think it's important to reiterate the point that you said, that people are trying to create awareness, and that's beautiful. We do need that, and we're thankful for that. But we're in a moment where we can have the conversation about why it's important that once you know better, to sort of do better. So maybe we can all just stop using that terminology and speak more, you know, positively and productively about how we can get the work done and how we can create awareness that's going to you know, bring us positive change that we desperately need here for Texans. And so, Jimmy, what are your thoughts on the Handmaid's Tale type of visual that people like to create?
That's an example of when you know better, you do better. So years ago, the show was just coming out, and the former director of what was then called NARAL Pro-Choice Texas had because the show was coming out, and she had seen like some handmaids walking down the street in Austin. She was like, that's a visual that's very compelling. So we did an action at the Capitol where I dressed up like a handmaid. I think this was 5 or 6 years ago, maybe around there. And it made a statement. We had a lot of headline. We got a lot of press, but we also realized that it was harmful. We got feedback from people saying that that's a fictional book, that it didn't bring in any of the race and background and ethnicity and all the other issues, and it just centered white women in it. And we issued an apology as a group. We discontinued that action. And I feel like we learned from that. And so it's hard to see. I mean, the show still is on, and not everyone remembers that far back. We have a very short-term memory with social media. And so I hope that it's not an attack on anybody who's sharing it right now. If this is your first kind of awareness of the issue, I get it. But now, if you do know better, then you can do better going forward and just concentrate on, I mean, what I was talking to my husband about preparing for today is, the white Christian nationalists, I'm going to call them, that have this. I mean, we are not religious, and my husband was actually brought up Jewish, and in Judaism, life doesn't start until the first breath. And so the idea that this is like some religious freedom is, I want freedom from their religion, honestly, because this is, it is so focused on one particular viewpoint that it makes you want to scream.
Right. And I really appreciate that. And I think that that's an important point to make, that this is really being brought forth and lobbied for by a certain religious group, right? And that that isn't fair to those that don't subscribe to it, that, you know, we all have to fall in line with that. And I do, again, want to, you know, reiterate for everybody listening that this conversation certainly isn't an attack. It is really just an effort to, you know, provide a space where we can have a more productive conversation to really help the citizens of our state and the pregnant people of our state. So I appreciate both of your thoughts there. And Representative Howard, I'd like to come back for 1 minute and just say, where do we go from here?
You know, let me just quickly say a couple of other things that I've been thinking of while y'all been talking. One is with Steph's story, looking back at teenagers right now, minorities are, teenagers are going to have a tremendous challenge accessing abortion now with trying to do judicial bypass and all that goes with that. Basically, they're not going to have any options. Doctors are risk averse. They are concerned about the even doing the Jenny, the medically determined abortions that with non-viability, ectopic pregnancies. I'm already hearing from the physicians that they're concerned about how this bill could impact them and the judgments that they're going to have to be making. Good medical judgments that can still be questioned by vigilantes and they can still be subject to suit. And then this ridiculous thing that the governor said about rape. The fact is that this particular legislation does not provide any options for rape or incest. And we know that the vast majority of sexual assaults are not even reported. Mm-hmm. And then those that are, only a very small percentage are prosecuted. This doesn't take into account, he's not taking into account what the reality of this situation is. And to say that they have 6 weeks and we're going to take all the rapists off the street when most sexual assaults are done by people who know one another, they're done in people's homes. It's not somebody off the street. It's just an absolutely ridiculous statement that is not based in any kind of facts, science, understanding of what's going on. And, you know, it's just one thing after another like this that is just absolutely astounding. Where we go from here, you know, I'm hopeful that on October 1st, when the hearing is held with the Department of Justice suit against Texas, that there will be a stay and at least give some temporary relief to having this bill being opposed. But, you know, we've got the Supreme Court set to hear in October the case from Mississippi that would limit abortions at 15 weeks. That is going to also be the potential to have the potential to severely limit access, followed up by what's happened here in Texas. So all we can say is we got the judicial system we're trying to work through. We know the Supreme Court is not friendly at this point in time after the Trump appointments, which was, of course, part of why he got elected in the first place, was because of these appointments that he was promising to make. And now we're going to suffer the consequences of that. So, you know, I got to tell you, the legislature has been really getting in the way of constitutional rights across the board with our vote, mm-hmm. with our bodies, looking at this ridiculous permitless carry, going after trans youth. The list goes on and on, telling teachers they can't talk about race. Social media platforms that are privately owned can't say what is or is not okay on their platforms. We're talking about super overregulation right now. The big brother is Texas. That's who's imposing all these things right now. And so what we can do, where we go forward, it's difficult to say. This is new ground we're treading right now. But clearly, we have to elect people who will uphold the constitutional rights of Texans. And that's just paramount. We've got to do that.
And to that point, Representative Howard, I mean, I think personally, the reason they are fighting so hard in this moment to get as much done from their platform as they can is because Texas is close. They see what's coming. Our demographic is changing. Our, you know, everything about the makeup of who Texas is, you know, it is becoming, you know, more diverse. And in addition, a lot of the groups that have been marginalized in Texas are now speaking out and saying no more, right? Because Texas has always been a diverse state. To say that it's not, it's just been in control by a bunch of, you know, being, you know, power hungry white men for so long. And Texans are really standing up. We saw record turnout in 2022. And, you know, now that we have everybody's attention here, you know, this is what we need to do to try to make a difference. And I think it's very much to the point of what Representative Howard said. We have to elect new leaders, and we need to get our legislative body, you know, more individuals and more legislators that are going to support the work of Representative Howard and others that have been in this fight. We are only 9 seats away from holding that majority in the Texas State House. 9 seats. We can do that. And so one thing I want everybody who's listening today to do, if you do not know who your state rep is, I want you to look it up. I know we're going to drop some links in the chat on how you can find that. I want you to figure out if you want to support that person, or you're going to follow up with who's going to run against them and throw some support their way. I want you all, you know, as another action item, to remember that we don't need to reinvent the wheel here in trying to support people in Texas who are looking for reproductive health care. There are a number of organizations who have been doing this work forever. Find one and support them. The newest shiny object is not always the best to jump on board with, because these other organizations really have the infrastructure in place to help people. So, you know, find an organization that you can support. And, you know, the last thing I'd like to mention is, and again, we'll drop a link in the chat, is reach out to Texas Blue Action. We would be happy to plug you in your neighborhood, help you find a precinct chair, or teach you how to organize the area that you live in. Because we have a fight on our hands in 2022, and we can make a difference, but we all have to engage. And I hope that y'all will join us again next week, where we'll talk about another hot issue in Texas and the different things that you can do to help make a difference here. I want to thank my guests, Representative Howard, Steph Govanez, and Jenny Padalavich Ross, for being here today and sharing your insight and your stories. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today. It was a wonderful opportunity to be here for our debut episode. So y'all take care and have a great Saturday.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Texas Blue Action Podcast, a production in affiliation with Progress Texas. Texas Blue Action is founded on progressive grassroots action, focused on year-round neighborhood organizing and committed to building sustainable democratic infrastructure in Texas. We turn out the voters that the Texas GOP fears the most. Production by me, Chris Mosier. Theme music generously provided by James McMurtry. Join Texas Blue Action at blueactiondems.com and also on Twitter and Facebook. Thanks again for listening. We'll catch you again next week.